Welcome to this podcast for VCE Physics Unit 3. Today we will be covering the detailed study structures and materials. Firstly, I'll go over some of the key terms that you will need to know for this topic, so that you can begin to discuss and understand structures and materials using the appropriate terminology. This is important because when it comes to answering exam questions, you will need to be very precise. Secondly, I'll explain the concept of stability and how it relates to structures and materials. We will need to think about things like net force and net torque. Net force is a concept that you should already be familiar with. Think back to the beginning of the year when we did the core area of study motion. We talked a lot about net force back then. You should remember Newton's three laws of motion. On this podcast, you will also hear about the three types of equilibrium relating to structures, and we will link these ideas with torque to get a really good understanding of exactly why objects sometimes fall over. After that, we'll start to talk about the forces present in structures, things like tension, compression, and shear, and how they affect buildings and bridges and things like that. Perhaps you might have seen the video footage of the Tacoma Bridge collapse. If not, you can look it up on YouTube a bit later and see for yourself why the study of structures and materials is so important. The Tacoma Bridge was opened in July 1940, and the locals noticed some disturbing effects pretty much straight away. Whenever the wind picked up a little bit, the two halves of the bridge would alternately rise and fall about a metre within a period of 4 or 5 seconds. Obviously, this is not ideal for a bridge, and the locals gave it the nickname Galloping Gertie because of the galloping motion felt by drivers as the bridge rose and fell. About 4 months after the bridge opened, on a particularly windy day, the bridge started to rise and fall just like it normally did, but it also started to twist and tilt. It was kind of like if you hold up a long piece of wide, flat elastic at exactly the right angle and then blow on it, you can get it to flutter. Well, this is exactly what the bridge was doing, only sort of in slow motion. Okay, so when the bridge started to flutter in the wind, the steel and concrete began absorbing energy and couldn't get rid of it fast enough. So the energy just kept on building and building until eventually it caused the materials to fail, like the concrete started to crack and the steel started to snap, and the bridge collapsed. Luckily, no people died, but several cars fell into the river, and they are all still there today, heritage listed as a reminder to structural and civil engineers all over the world. Okay, let's get this show on the road. We'll start with the terminology. Force. By now, you should have a fairly good understanding of what a force is and what the effects of a force are. Remember, force is a vector quantity. This means that it has a size or a magnitude and a direction. A force can be anything that causes an object to change its motion or its shape in some way. When we're trying to analyze the motion of an object, we need to consider all the forces acting on that object. If an object is at rest or stationary, this means that all the external forces are balanced. For example, if your two twin brothers stood on either side of you and tried to push you towards the other, you would be experiencing two forces of the same size in opposite directions. The overall effect of these forces would be zero net force. You wouldn't move anywhere. You would not accelerate. If one of your twin brothers then decided he was bored and stopped pushing whilst the other continued to push, you would now be experiencing an unbalanced force or a net force, and you would begin to accelerate. And you would probably fall over. Little brothers can be really annoying, can't they? All sounding familiar? Good. Let's continue. The next term that we need to understand is torque. No, not torque as in James talks incessantly during physics lessons, but torque. T-O-R-Q-U-E. You can think of it as a force that causes an object to rotate, or a force that causes rotational motion. The symbol that we use for torque is tau, that funny-looking T, which is actually a Greek letter. The mathematical formula that tells us the size of a torque is tau, or torque, equals the applied force times the radial distance from the pivot point at which that force is applied. When you are doing calculations involving torque, it is important to take into account the direction of the torque. That's right, torque, like force, is a vector quantity. With torque, however, we really only need to think about directions as being clockwise or anti-clockwise, or, if you like, positive and negative. I think it is a good idea to always define the clockwise direction as positive and the anti-clockwise direction as negative. Working out whether a torque is positive or negative will also depend on the individual problems and where you define the pivot point to be. The pivot point is that fixed point, or the point around which the object will rotate. In fact, you could define the pivot point to be anywhere you like within a given question, and as long as you define the correct radial distance and force values, you will still get the right answer. Remember though, you must be extra careful with those radial distances. One side of the pivot point will be positive and the other side will be negative, so any forces acting on opposite sides of the pivot point will result in torques with opposite signs. Okay, let's move on to stability. Stability is an extremely important factor that needs to be considered whenever builders and engineers construct anything at all. Stability affects small and large structures. When structures are not stable, the materials may crack, the structure might start to lean, and it may even fall over or collapse. One of the most famous buildings in the world is the Leaning Tower of Pisa. You only need to look at a picture of the Leaning Tower of Pisa to understand that it is not a particularly stable building. Very soon after construction began in 1173, the tower began to lean towards the southeast. It currently leans at an angle of approximately 4 degrees, meaning that the top of the tower is about 3.9 meters away from where it should be. That's a pretty significant lean. The slant of the tower is due to the poor foundations. The loose soil substrate under the tower was able to shift around, and this caused the building to start leaning over. If it wasn't for the constant battles between local populations in Pisa and Genoa, which suspended construction for around 100 years, the building would almost certainly have toppled. As it happened, the break in construction allowed the soil below the tower to settle, and it became more compacted. Hence, the tower stood crooked for hundreds of years. Recently, a multinational team of architects and engineers have completed restoration and stability work on the tower, meaning that after a decade of being closed to the public in the 1990s, the tower has now reopened and been declared stable for at least another 300 years. Okay, so physical stability is really important, and there are two conditions that must be met for a structure to be considered stable. The first condition of stability is that net force acting on the structure must be zero. This makes sense because if net force was non-zero, then according to Newton's second law, F equals ma, the structure would begin to accelerate. So, net forces must equal zero. The second condition for stability is that net torques must equal zero. Again, this makes sense because you wouldn't want a structure to rotate, because this would make it topple or lean, like the tower in Pisa. Alright, so if both of these conditions are satisfied, that is, net force equals zero and net torque equals zero, then a structure can be considered stable. Let's move on now to the idea of equilibrium. There are three types of equilibrium. Firstly, there is unstable equilibrium. Think about trying to make a pencil stand on its tip. It's almost impossible to do. As soon as you let go, the pencil falls over. But why? Can you explain why the pencil falls using the idea of force and torque? Well, the answer to that question does involve force and torque. Think about the forces acting on the pencil if you did somehow miraculously get it to balance on its tip. There would be the weight force, acting downwards through the center of the pencil, and also the normal reaction force acting upwards from the table. If the pencil is balanced, then these two forces are collinear. That means that they act in the same line. Two collinear forces of equal magnitude and opposite directions will cancel each other out, so the pencil won't accelerate. There is zero net force. And because both of the forces act in opposite directions through the same point, that is, the pivot point, this means that the torques will add up to zero as well, and there is no net torque either. But hang on. We've just explained why the pencil doesn't fall over. That's not very useful. So, let's think a little bit more. Let's say that the pencil leans slightly one way. This means that the center of mass of the pencil moves slightly too. This means that the weight force and the normal reaction force are no longer collinear. As soon as the weight force and normal reaction force are not acting in the same line, two torques are set up. The weight acts to rotate the center of mass of the pencil downwards towards the table, and the normal reaction force acts to rotate the tip of the pencil upwards. The overall result is that the pencil falls over. We say that the pencil was in unstable equilibrium because it only needed to move a tiny distance from that equilibrium position before torque came into effect and the pencil fell. Can you think of other examples of unstable equilibrium? How about a ball sitting on top of a hill? It would only need to move slightly one way to either side before it started rolling down the hill. Or a roller coaster momentarily at the top of its track. How about a 20-cent coin standing on its edge? These are all examples of unstable equilibrium. The second type of equilibrium is neutral equilibrium. It's a little bit easier to explain than the first one. An object in neutral equilibrium will stay where it is without falling. If you then move it slightly away from the original position, it will quite happily stay there too. An example of this would be a ball sitting in the middle of a big flat table. It stays where you put it with zero net force and zero net torque. If you then move it slightly, a few centimeters or so, it will stay there as well with zero net force and zero net torque. Make sense? Good. Let's continue. The third type of equilibrium is stable equilibrium. The best way to think about this is to imagine a skateboard sitting in the bowl at a local skate park. If you leave the skateboard alone, it will stay at the bottom of the bowl, at the deepest point if you like. You could give the skateboard a little push up the side of the bowl, but it would inevitably return to where it started. It might oscillate back and forth a bit before it stopped, but it would stop eventually. See what I mean? You would say that the skateboard was in stable equilibrium. Despite small changes in position, the object returns to its original location. Okay, now I want to talk a little bit about other objects and why they sometimes fall over and sometimes don't. Think back to the example of the pencil standing on its tip. You should understand why the pencil fell. But what about objects that have bigger base areas, like a brick, for example? If a brick is standing on its end, just like the pencil, it has two forces acting on it, the weight force and the normal reaction force. If you push the brick sideways a little bit at the top, you would cause the brick to balance on one of its bottom edges. The normal reaction force would now act upwards through this edge. The weight force will still act directly downwards through the center of mass of the brick. With the brick in this position, there are two torques set up because the forces are no longer collinear. Depending on exactly how far you tilt the brick, one of two things will happen. If the weight still points down through the base area of the brick, the torques will cause the brick to rotate back to its standing position. On the other hand, if you tilt the brick so much that the weight force goes past the edge where the normal reaction force acts, then the torques will now be arranged so that they cause a net torque in the other direction, and they would, in fact, cause the brick to topple. So, how can we increase the stability of a structure? To increase the stability of a structure, we would need to make it harder to get the structure in the position where the torques act to topple the object. Remember, this depends on the base area and the center of mass of the object. If you make the base of the object wider, it would need to tilt further before the weight force could point outside of that area. So, objects with wider bases are more stable than objects with narrow bases. The other thing that you can do is make the center of mass lower. This also means that you would have to tilt the object a lot before the weight vector got outside of the base area. So, putting this all together, the lower the center of mass and the wider the base area of an object, the more stable it becomes. Alright, on to the last section of this podcast, where we'll talk about the forces present in structures. The two main ones are tension and compression. Tension and compression can be quite simple to understand by themselves, but when you begin to combine them, you get effects like shear and bending, which we'll talk about in a few minutes. Okay, the first force is tension, or tensile force. This is a stretching force. You would already have an understanding of tensile forces from your work in the motion area of study and from way back in Unit 2 physics. Tension is the force that acts through a taut rope or through a stretched elastic band. If you like, tension is the force that acts when the molecules in a material are being pulled further apart. In a horizontal string, tension is the same at all points along the string. You can't make a string more taut at one end than the other. However, when you hang a rope vertically, the tension is a bit more complicated. In this case, the tension at the top of the rope is bigger than the tension at the bottom. This is because the top section of the rope is supporting the weight of all the rope below it, whereas the bottom section of the rope only supports, well, the bottom section. So, this explains why a rope will usually snap at the top if you hang too much mass off the bottom of it. Of course, there are also other factors involved, like weak points in the rope, where it may not be made quite as well, and these regions are also potential breaking points. Objects under tension tend to increase in length. In the case of an elastic band, the increase in length is quite noticeable, but usually, the increase in length of a material under tension is only very small. The second force that we need to discuss is compression. Compression is a squashing force or a squeezing force. When you use an object like a wall to support the weight of something above it, like a roof, you put the wall under compression. Like the tension in the vertical rope, the compression force is not constant throughout the material. Think about the wall that supports the roof. At the top of the wall, it only supports the weight of the roof. But towards the bottom of the wall, it supports the roof and all the weight of the wall above it. So, compression forces are greater at the bottom of an object. When compression forces become too large, materials may crack or crumble. One way of avoiding this cracking or crumbling at the bottom of a structure due to excess compression, is by making the bottom of the structure wider or larger. This way, the effect of the compression gets spread out over a larger volume, so the structure will be less likely to crack or crumble. Okay, let's talk about shear and bending. Firstly, let's consider that forces don't always spread themselves out evenly over the cross-section of an object. Imagine that you have a really thick book sitting on a table, and you apply a force to the top of the book so that the top moves sideways, but the bottom of the book stays put. This type of effect is called a shear. It is the result of a force that acts to deform the shape of an object. At the molecular level, it is a force that tends to make the layers of molecules slide over each other. In a big structure like a building, the change in shape may not be as noticeable as the change in shape of the book on the table, but it may still have a detrimental effect on the building materials over time. And lastly, bending. This is easiest to explain if you think about a diver walking out to the end of a springy diving board. As the diver walks towards the end of the board, the weight of the diver tends to make the board sag or bend. This puts the top side of the board in tension, and at the same time, it puts the bottom side of the board in compression. Make sense? Good. Now imagine it the other way round. Imagine that you were building a thick wall and somehow managed to put one side of the wall under compression and the other side under tension. The overall effect would be that the wall would bend. You can even cause bending by putting two sections of the same wall under different amounts of compression. If one part of a structure is being squashed more than the other part, then it makes sense that the object would begin to bend. Okay, that's it for this podcast. You should now be a bit more familiar with the concepts of force, torque, and stability, and you should also be able to discuss all the forces present in structures. These are tension and compression, shear and bending. If you're still a bit unsure of these things, the great thing about podcasting is that you can simply go back and listen again. Since this was my very first attempt at podcasting, I would appreciate any feedback. Tell me what you liked, what you didn't like, what you might like to hear in any future episodes, and that sort of thing. You can email me at rachel@norwood.vic.edu.au. Or you can catch me at school. Remember, it's never too early to start studying for the mid-year physics exam. See you later.